Before I introduce Governor Pence, I just want to thank Mason City Police Chief Jeff Brinkley and the Mason City Law Enforcement that are here today. We thank you for your service and for protecting us every day, so thank you. Governor Pence graduated from law school in 1986. He served in the Indiana U.S. House of Representatives, representing the 2nd and 6th Congressional Districts. He hosted the Mike Pence Show from 1994 to 1999. He was elected Indiana's 50th governor in 2013. Indiana was the first state to repeal Common Core. And that was under his leadership. He's married to Karen and has three children, Charlotte, Audrey, and Michael. Michael is a second lieutenant in the United States Marine Corps. Governor Pence's father ran several gas stations, and his grandfather was a bus driver in Chicago. We have a choice this November, from the State House to the White House. These choices matter. The Trump-Pence team believes in you and wants you to prosper. To help us, they have announced child care reform, to rebuild our military to the level it should be, the strongest defense in the world, health care reform, and a clear economic vision, just to name a few. The Trump-Pence team will ensure a conservative Supreme Court justice is appointed. Governor Pence is a God-fearing man and not ashamed to speak the word of God. Let us show Governor Pence that Iowans are standing with him. I give to you the next Vice President of the United States, Governor Mike Pence.
Hello, Iowa. Thanks so very much. Thank you for coming out. Mason City, Iowa. In the midst of a campaign, my wife Karen and I couldn't be more grateful and more excited that you all would take time to be with us today. We are just about 50 days away from a great victory for all of the American people when we elect Donald Trump as the next president of the United States. And I'm excited to be with you today. Barbara, thank you for that wonderful introduction to the... Give a round of applause to the Iowa Speaker of the House, Linda Obmeyer. Linda, thank you so much. Thanks for your leadership. Thanks for being here. It's a joy to be in this historic place. My favorite musical by a lot. So thank you all for celebrating that great, great American tradition of the music, man. I will tell you, Barbara knows me well enough to know the introduction I prefer is just a little bit shorter. I'm a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican in that order. And it was now just a few short months ago that with my wife at my side, I accepted my party's nomination to run and serve as the next Vice President of the United States of America. And we couldn't be more humbled and couldn't be more honored. And I'm glad to be able to come and talk to you about that today, about why I answered that call in a heartbeat. As I did so because you have nominated a man for president who never quits. He's a fighter. He's a winner. And I promise you that he's going to bring the kind of broad-shouldered, courageous American leadership back to the Oval Office that will meet the challenges in these challenging times. And we're grateful for the momentum all across the country. More people every day, more men and women every day understand that we can make America great again when we elect this good man as our next president of the United States. And let me say, I don't spend a lot of time on the polls, but thank you, Iowa, for that strong and commanding lead. Let's drive it all the way to November 8th. I'm going to share a few things from my heart with you, and then I'm going to slide out of the sunshine here, and I'm going to take some questions from you before and behind me. But, you know, this election's about many things. Seems like the other parties simply got an agenda of insults. It seems like every day I have to turn on the television with a stick. I don't know what they're going to be complaining about my run I'm made every day. You know, it really is extraordinary. But the real issues in this campaign are prosperity. They're our Constitution. They're the high standards in the highest office in the land. But it's also about security. And I want to begin by talking with you very plainly about that today. Because obviously all of us have heavy hearts. With the news that this weekend we saw terrorist attacks from the heartland in Minnesota, where 9 Americans were injured when a radical Islamic terrorist wielding a knife brought terror to that community. Bombs going off in New York City and in New Jersey. It is truly a miracle of God that no one lost their life with a weekend of terrorist attacks. And this afternoon, because of the swift efforts of law enforcement in New Jersey, I'm pleased that a suspect was apprehended and arrested who is thought to be the mastermind of the attacks in New Jersey and New York. You know, our hearts and our prayers go out to the injured, those recovering from their injuries, and including law enforcement officers in these incidents, and their families. But could we just take a minute to thank the brave men and women, our first responders, our law enforcement officers, who we saw again this week rush in and put our safety ahead of their own. We are so blessed to have the law enforcement. You can get on your feet if you want. Let's show these people how much we appreciate what they do every day. Thanks, everybody. You know, it's even as we reel from the events this weekend, we got to put them into context. I would submit to you 7.5 years of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's leadership on the world stage has weakened America's place in the world, and it's emboldened our enemies. Terrorist attacks here at home and abroad, grim and heartbreaking scenes, and our allies. You know, history teaches us that weakness arouses evil. And I would submit to you that the weak and feckless foreign policy of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton has emboldened our enemies and compromised the safety of the American people. But that's all going to end on the 20th day of January, when Donald Trump becomes president of the United States. It will. When you think of this leadership, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama's foreign policy, they literally say, they boast of leading from behind, moving red lines, feigning resets with Russia. The rise and rule and reign of ISIS are all a testament to this truth of history that weakness arouses evil. But, you know, I'm not even sure that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama know we're at war. I mean, did you hear a White House spokesman today went on national television and said that we were in a, quote, narrative fight, a, quote, narrative battle? Well, that would be news to the men and women in uniform in Iraq who are taking the fight to the enemy every day and working with our allies to defeat ISIS at its source. We're not at war. We're not in a narrative fight. We're at war with the ISIS caliphate that sprang up because Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama insisted on a precipitous withdrawal of all American forces from Iraq without a new status of forces agreement that would have left thousands of American troops in Iraq to protect those hard-fought American gains. I mean, it really is extraordinary when you think of the march that our nation has been on in recent years. Just this summer, ISIS attacks launched outside the war zone happened every 84 hours. Even though her running mate said that the situation had dramatically improved, ISIS was able to project violence outside the war zone every 84 hours since this summer. And the litany of domestic terror here at home is heartbreaking to think of it. Fort Hood, 13 killed, 38 wounded. The Boston Marathon, 264 wounded, 5 dead, including 2 police officers. Chattanooga, 5 unarmed Marines cut down. San Bernardino, 14 killed, 22 injured. And Orlando, 49 killed, 53 injured. Last month, despite the statements by the other side that things had dramatically improved, a U.S. intelligence, what's called a heat map, was leaked publicly, showing ISIS had not only doubled the number of countries in which it was fully operational to 13 from 2013 to 2015, but it also had expanded the battlefield to 18 countries today. You know, we got news for Hillary Clinton. We are not in a narrative fight. We are at war with radical Islamic terrorism, and we need a president who knows it. I mean, there is a narrative of denial that's emanating out of the campaign of Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine. I mean, 1 week ago, she was accusing millions of Americans of Islamophobia and racism because of their concern about security in this country. Now, this morning, Hillary Clinton said we need to reform our visa program. Well, why didn't she do that when she was Secretary of State for 4 years? Or say we should have done it before this weekend? Now she says we need better vetting, even though she continues to want to increase the Syrian refugee program by 550%. Now, the worst of it, I will tell you, it's that campaign of insults went to a new low this morning. Did you hear about this? Hillary Clinton actually said my running mate's rhetoric had been, quote, seized on by terrorists, in particular ISIS, as they're looking to make this a war against Islam. And she said that Donald Trump's rhetoric had, quote, was, quote, giving comfort to our adversaries. Well, Hillary, strength does not give comfort to our adversaries. Weakness does. I have to tell you, folks, we cannot have 4 more years apologizing to our enemies and abandoning our friends. America needs to be strong. In these challenging times and in these disconcerting days, we ought to recognize the simple truth. America needs to be strong for the world to be safe. We need new leadership at the national level who will name our enemy for who it is, who will rebuild our military, and who will hunt down and destroy ISIS and any terrorist organization that threatens our people or threatens our allies. I promise you this. After January 20th, when Donald Trump becomes president of the United States, America will once again lead on the world stage from strength. We will rebuild our military. We will stand with our allies, and we will confront radical Islamic terrorism, and the world will be safer as a result. That's probably why, as of Friday, 160 retired U.S. generals and admirals have endorsed Donald Trump as the next commander-in-chief. And let me promise you this, just as you did a moment ago, as the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, Donald Trump knows it's not just about confronting the enemy abroad, but it's as we were grimly reminded this weekend, it's about being able to identify and confront the enemy at home. Donald Trump will end the era of political correctness in law enforcement, and we will give our police officers and law enforcement and FBI the tools and resources they need to hunt down those who would threaten our families and threaten our communities, to be able to prevent terrorist acts like what happened this weekend. And law enforcement officers know this. Maybe that's why the 330,000 members of the Fraternal Order of Police have endorsed Donald Trump to be the next president of the United States. So we have challenges, men and women. For America to be strong, America needs to be safe. And I promise you that the day Donald Trump and I step into the White House, the safety and security of the American people will be our first priority. We will work hard. There's no enemy that can't be beaten. And Donald Trump and I know, as he described in that speech I recommend to your attention from Youngstown, Ohio, that if we will name our enemy, if we will rebuild our military, if we will stand by and provide law enforcement at home with the resources they need, we can have peace at home and security abroad again. But it will take new leadership, and that leadership is going to be found in Donald Trump. Now, two other quick things I want to mention to you. I know in the midst of that breaking news, it's be easy to pass over some of the other challenges we're facing, but I want to speak to those and then I'll get to your questions. It's important to remember that while security must always be of paramount importance, prosperity is on the ballot this year as well. Now, the other side, again, likes to paint a rosy picture, kind of like they did about security, about things getting better. The truth of the matter is, in this economy, we're in the midst of the weakest economic recovery since the Great Depression. We have the lowest labor participation rate in this country since the 1970s. And there's nearly 7 million more Americans living in poverty today than the day that Barack Obama became president of the United States. Hillary Clinton's plan, plain and simple, more of the same. More tax increases, more spending, more regulation, more Obamacare, and more of the war on coal that's been stifling American growth and American jobs. You know, they tell us this economy is the best that we can do. We've heard that before. Remember the famous Malaise speech back in the 1970s? Some of you with hair the same color as me. Then, as now, we had a president that literally told Americans that there were high energy prices. What they ought to do is turn down their thermostat and wear a sweater. And then along came a plain-spoken man who'd grown up on the plains himself before he went to California. And he said, it doesn't have to be that way. Well, Donald Trump and I know this is nowhere near the best that we can do. It's just the best they can do. And when Donald Trump becomes president of the United States, we're going to get this economy moving for everybody in Iowa and everybody all across the United States of America. And we're going to do it doing what's always worked before. You know, you can't tax your way back into a growing economy. You know, you can't spur economic growth with more red tape. Donald Trump and I know that we can get this economy moving again through those time-honored principles of less taxes, less regulation, more American energy, tougher and smarter trade deals. And he outlined that plan at a Detroit Economic Club speech, and we were in New York City just last week, and he laid it all out again. We're going to lower marginal income tax rates across the board for working families, small businesses, and family farms. We're going to end death taxes once and for all. We're going to lower business taxes in America from 35% down to 15% so companies in Iowa can compete with companies all over the world and keep jobs right here in the United States. We're going to roll back regulation. Day one of the Trump administration, he's going to sign an order putting a moratorium on any new regulation and red tape. We're going to repeal Obamacare, lock, stock, and barrel. And he's going to repeal every single one of Barack Obama's executive orders that's stifling growth and stifling jobs here in Iowa and all across America. And on energy reform, Donald Trump and I believe that one of the great blessings of this nation are the resources of this nation, the natural resources. And on day one of our administration, we're going to end the war on coal once and for all. We're going to have an all-of-the-above energy strategy: wind, coal, natural gas, nuclear, solar, renewables, conservation. We're going to drive America forward with a growing American energy economy in a Trump-Pence administration. And lastly, we're going to, when we elect the negotiator-in-chief, we're finally going to have a president who's going to roll his sleeves up and make sure that when we have trade deals with countries in our hemisphere or countries around the world, that those deals work for American workers first. We're going to hold our trading partners accountable and ensure that trade means jobs right here in the United States of America. And I know it all still works. I mean, the truth of the matter is, you know, the growth we've had in Indiana, the growth you've had under Governor Branstad and this great legislature in Iowa, it's really all been in spite of what this administration's been up to, not because of it, right? But we all know those time-honored principles. They worked before. They worked in the 1980s, frankly. Lower marginal income tax rates got America growing back in the 1960s when John F. Kennedy was president of the United States, and it's going to work again. Now, Hillary Clinton's pretty skeptical about that, though. A lot of economists are saying that the economy's going to take off like a jackrabbit, get out of this rut we're in, growing at about 1% in the last quarter. But Hillary said that those projections were, quote, wildly unrealistic. Well, Donald Trump and I know what people of Iowa know. The only thing wildly unrealistic is electing the same people with the same bad ideas and expecting a different result. When Donald Trump becomes president of the United States, we're going to put time-honored principles of growth into practice, and Iowa and America are going to start growing again. Lastly, let me put one more thing in your ear, and then I'll step aside and see what's on your mind. And that is, while security must always be first, after the troubling weekend that we just passed through, it's even higher than that in our minds. Our prosperity and the prosperity of our children and grandchildren is on the ballot this year. There's one other issue that I don't want to escape your notice, and I hope you leave here today and really talk to people about, and that is, we're electing a president for the next 4 years, but that president will very likely set the course and direction of the Supreme Court of the United States for the next 40 years. And you better think about that real hard. And if you cherish the God-given liberties that are enshrined in our Constitution, the right to keep and bear arms enshrined in the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, if you cherish the sanctity of life, you cherish all of our liberties, we just have to decide right here and now, Iowa. And you all always get to play an outsized role early in the year. But you're going to play an outsized role on November 8th. So let's decide, Iowa, that the next president who will make appointments to the Supreme Court of the United States for the sake of the rule of law, for the sake of the Second Amendment, for the sake of all of our God-given liberties and the sanctity of life, let's make sure that that president is President Donald Trump. Now, with that, I'm going to slide to your questions because I really want to know what's on your mind. But I do hope you leave here today with a burden on your heart to tell somebody. Because I think the reason why we're doing so well in Iowa, the reason why we're doing so well over the last several weeks all across the country is because whatever's happening on the television screen, whatever's happening on the front page of the newspapers, the American people are talking to one another about this election. We're getting through. I got to tell you, You know, every day you get up and you open up a newspaper and it seems like this election's pretty much two on one every day, with the media doing half of Hillary's work for her. There's a few happy exceptions in there, but they're the exception to the rule. But the amazing thing is that all the newspapers in the world, all the radio broadcasts, TV broadcasts, cable TV shows, the internet, everything else, don't matter a hill of beans to when you stop and talk to a neighbor over a backyard fence or at work or at worship and just tell them the stakes in this election. And I truly do believe with all of my heart, if over the next 50 some odd days, all of us will do all that we can, we're not only going to elect Donald Trump as the 45th president of the United States, but quicker than you could possibly imagine, we're going to make America great again. Thanks, everybody. Thanks so much.
Okay. Does anyone have a question for Governor Pence?
Yeah, thanks. Is this working?
I've got you. Okay. We've got one right over here. Would you stand up? Yes. What's your name and where are you from?
Dixie Sheriff, and I'm from Mason City as of last week.
Okay, and what's your
Great.
Question?
The rising cost of pharmaceutical drugs. I went to renew a prescription yesterday, and it had doubled in the last month. And it's a small prescription. It's not anything like these shots that these people have to have. What are you going to do with the pharmaceutical companies?
Thank you.
We got a different one. Got that working. What's your name again? Dixie? Dixie, thank you for your question. Appreciate it very much. Well, I think first and foremost, what we're going to do on health care is we're going to unleash the power of the free market. And that begins with repealing Obamacare, lock, stock, and barrel. We're just going to do it. And by that, I mean we're going to set America on a course where the marketplace itself is going to begin to set prices. Now, whether it be prescription medications, or you've got one of two choices. One is to let the marketplace work and let consumerism work, which invariably lowers, makes goods more available and lowers prices. Or you can have price controls, which ultimately, historically teaches. Now, the other side will talk about that, and you hear that talked about all the time, but that historically drives scarcity and the availability of these important medicines in the world. But I truly do believe that one of the best things that we can do for growth in this country, one of the best things we can do for healthcare in this country, is by ending Obamacare, block granting Medicaid back to the states so that we can allow states like Iowa and Indiana to truly innovate in those public health systems for people at the point of the need, and then allow the marketplace itself to begin to develop products, not just on a state-by-state basis, but nationwide insurance products that will be able to provide the kind of coverage that people need and deserve, not only for their medicines, but for their primary care and for all types of health care. So I think you're going to see a transformation of healthcare in America, but in a Trump-Pence administration, it's going to be driven by consumer choice and driven by the free market.
Okay. Thank you so much. We have another question over here. What is your name and where are you from?
My name is Rebecca, and I am from Minnesota, actually.
Oh, hi.
I would just like to say that you have a ton of support, Trump-Pence ticket up there. Minnesota. Just over the weekend, we got a new poll in, and that poll is tightening. I mean, it's amazing. It's liberal Minnesota, and even there, people are waking up. It's fantastic. But my question is, what would you guys do as far as reforming or aligning the Veterans Administration to help take better care of our veterans? I mean, we have veterans that are dying, waiting in line for appointments and such.
Right. Thank you. It's Becca, right? Yeah, thank you, Becca. In Minnesota, you're sure on our hearts. And you're in our prayers, families that are all affected by that terrorist attack. Although I'm just so proud that an off-duty police officer who had a sidearm took that man down. All right? Terrific question. You know, one of the first speeches that I ever attended with Donald Trump was at the VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars. And I'd recommend that speech to your attention, because in it he laid out literally a 10-point plan to reform the VA and the Veterans Health Administration. I mean, all of us have been shocked in the last several years to hear about stories of actually men and women who've worn the uniform of the United States who have passed away waiting for medical treatment. That is totally unacceptable, and it's going to end the day that Donald Trump becomes president of the United States, Becca. I promise you. It's over. Donald Trump and I believe that when you're talking about benefits in the VA, you're not talking about an entitlement. You're talking about benefits that men and women have earned in the uniform of the United States. This is their ongoing pay for putting their life on the line. And that's how we view it. We're going to reform the system, new personnel. We're going to bring state-of-the-art technologies to it. You'll see it all in that speech if you take a look at it. It's available online. But you'll also hear that while we're going to reform the VA and we're going to preserve the VA, we're also going to make sure that if a veteran walks in the door and can't get world-class health care in real time, we're going to make it possible for that veteran to walk across the street and get private health care on the taxpayer dime. We're not going to make people wait anymore. So be ready. So, Becca, thanks for your concern. And were you in the armed forces as well? Well, could I just ask, if you're able to stand, could the men and women who've worn the uniform of the United States, would you just mind standing up and just letting us thank you one more time? Thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. We are truly grateful.
We've got one in the back.
Okay, one in the back. Yes, sir. What's your name?
Dennis from Charles City.
Hi, Dennis.
First of all, thank you for your sacrifices to make America great again.
Thank you. It's a privilege.
I've been kind of wondering about our whistleblowers. They've been really taking a hit with Obama, and I know we can get a lot of good out of those people.
Yeah. Well, I think anyone who upholds the highest standards of integrity in public life ought to be protected and celebrated under the law. And we have those protections in federal law, and I'm sure you do here as well in Iowa. You know, there wasn't really time to talk about it today, about the avalanche of corruption that's flowing out of the years of the Clinton Foundation and during her years as Secretary of State. And I've only got about another half hour here, so I really couldn't get through all of it. But let's just decide we're going to have the highest standards of integrity in the highest office in the land, and that's going to require us to elect Donald Trump as our next president.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
And we have a question up front here.
Just slip your hand in the air if you've got a question.
Stand up and tell them what your name is and where you're from.
My name is Mason.
Hi, Nathan.
And I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. How big is that wall?
That's a good question.
Bigger than that, right there, Nathan. Thanks, buddy. As big as it needs to be. Yeah. You're the same guy. Are you stalking me? Is that he was at another town hall meeting, and I think that's a hat that I signed. Well, let me promise you. He asked me, how big is the wall going to be? Two answers. Big enough, and Mexico's going to pay for it. Okay? Just trust me. In the back? Somebody in the back there?
We actually have someone here. Last question then. Would you please stand? Where are you from?
I'm from Minnesota also.
Oh, thank you.
My name is Vicki Froelich.
Hi, Vicki.
I just wanted to say a very sincere thank you to you for saying yes to Donald Trump. Because I don't want to tell my grandchildren that the best we could do was align Hillary for president. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, I will tell you, we're very humbled by this opportunity. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, some reporter said, so what's the biggest surprise on this journey you're on as a candidate for Vice President of the United States? And I said, that I'm on it. I mean, you know, to know me is, and to know my family, my wife Karen is here and our daughter Charlotte is here. She travels with us almost every day. Karen and I are out on the road almost every day. But you got to understand, my grandfather came to this country, went through Ellis Island from Ireland. He caught a train to Chicago. He drove a bus for 40 years. I was named after him. My dad married one of my grandpa's daughters and took her down to a small town in southern Indiana and ran a gas station business. And I've been to my grandfather's home in Ireland, about the size of this area right here. 10 brothers and sisters in a two-room house. I can't even imagine what he's thinking about looking down here, other than the fact that he was right about America. He was right. That in America, anybody can be anybody. If you work hard, you study hard, whatever that dream is in your heart, you can live it here. I mean, these veterans all fought for that land of the free and home of the brave in their day, and it's just an incredibly humbling thing for me and my family to be in this position. But I do want to make it clear to you, it wasn't hard to say yes, because we got a chance to get to know Donald Trump and his family before the phone call came. We actually spent time with them as a family and got to meet their kids. There's a saying we have in Indiana, I love to repeat it when people come up to me and say, what are they really like? And, you know, maybe you say it here in Iowa. When you hear somebody say, they're good people. Do you know what I mean by that? The kind of people you'd love to live next door to. I mean, they're caring people. This is a man who loves his family. He loves this country. I mean, it's to see the passion that he has for America. He's in Florida today. We talked early this morning. We talked just about every day. We campaign together every week. I've never seen someone with the energy and the determination that drives this man. But I know it ultimately comes out of a love for this country. Because the truth is, my story and his story have some similarities. I tell people, just like my grandfather immigrated to this country, his grandfather immigrated to this country. His father was a self-made man who built a big business in Queens. And he and I were both raised to believe that to whom much is given, much will be required, right? And so he decided to take that vision to Manhattan Island and build skyscrapers to the heavens, and I felt a calling into public service. I always tell people, other than a whole lot of zeros, Donald Trump and I have a lot in common. What we have in common, though, is a belief in the American dream, because we lived it. We grew up in it. We saw it happen. And, you know, despite the challenging times in which we live, the troubling days we just passed through as Americans, despite the challenges in our economy that we face in this country, the frustrations that we have seeing our courts walk away and from our constitutional foundation, I truly do believe that what drives him and what called us into this service is a belief that it can all come back. That with the right leadership, with reelected Republican majorities in the House and in the Senate, with great leadership at the state level, we can restore this country at home and abroad. We can have America standing tall in the world again. We can rebuild the arsenal of democracy. We can stand with our allies, stand up to our enemies, and at home we can have a boundless future that we no longer question whether or not our kids have a chance to have a more prosperous future than us, like too many Americans do today. We can be confident that they will, because this is America. Donald Trump and I both believe that to our core, and it's why I truly do believe that this good man, with whom I'm honored to stand, will make a great president of the United States of America. So let's go get it done. Let's go make it happen, Iowa. And when we do, starting here in Iowa, we'll make America great again. Thanks very much. God bless you. It's an honor to be with all of you today.